Next up on the programme, the niece of a man who was once accused of being a serial killer has waived her right to anonymity to tell her story. Debbie Ross says as a child she was abused by Leslie Ross from Dromore. The trial for the abuse was halted when he died 2 weeks ago. This is the first time that a relative of the man once accused of being a serial killer has spoken and gives an insight into him and his character. Now, in 2015, he was accused of murdering three of his former girlfriends, but he was eventually cleared of all murder charges. He had been facing 44 sex abuse charges when he passed away earlier this month, meaning that his niece's allegations can no longer be tested in court. Now, Debbie Ross says one of the reasons she emigrated to the US was to forget her uncle, who sexually abused her as a child. Debbie Ross is now a research scientist in the US and has waived her rights anonymity to speak to the BBC, and she has been talking to BBC News NI's investigations correspondent Kevin McGee, who went to meet her in her home in New York to hear her story. And what an impressive story of triumph over adversity it is. Just a note of warning before we play you this extended version of what you've already heard some clips from on Good Morning Ulster. Some of you may find this very upsetting, and indeed it is not suitable for children to hear. Kevin began by asking Debbie how old she was when Leslie Ross started to abuse her.
It began when I was 6 years old. It continued up until I was 9 and a half, 10. It was intermittently before my dad died, but we lived with my grandparents for a period after that, and that's when a lot of the more aggressive stuff took place.
The abuse you suffered and the charges that were brought against Leslie Ross were at the very worst end of the spectrum.
Yeah, and it would usually be when my mom and grandma would go to get supplies for the bar that I'd be left on my own, and that's when things would take place. And the back of the place was the stables, and so as the grooming continued, we moved out to that area, and that's when things progressed. He was very directive about what he wanted done. To get out to the back, there was a run that had a dog in it, a white Alsatian, and you couldn't get to the back of where this was happening except you went past the dog. So once we were out in that area, I was pretty much isolated, and there was nobody could really walk in on us while he continued to move through the abuse through the stages.
As a child, how did you reconcile what was happening to you?
I was a very curious child, and you know, it was like Uncle Leslie's teaching you, so it kind of was put to me that this was his job to teach me this, that everybody was taught this by some member or some older male would teach girls this, and this was something that I needed to know, and he'd been assigned to teach me. And that's the way it was put across to me initially. And there wasn't any threats at that point, but at one point my mother asked me, has anything happened? And I explained to her, yeah, I didn't know it wasn't right or wrong. So when she asked me, I just kind of poured everything out. And I saw her face change at a point. And that's when I stopped telling her how bad it had gone.
You stopped telling her?
I didn't tell her the full amount of it. I thought I was in trouble because of the way her face changed. I never told anybody what had happened beyond that, because I figured I was the one in trouble when the face changed. I thought she was angry at me.
Did you think that this was a normal childhood?
At the start, I thought that's how you got to know everything. I didn't realise, because I was so young, that you got your experience with partners your own age as you grew up through adolescence. I skipped that whole point and went from childhood to complete loss of innocence with an adult.
So you did tell your parents you were being abused.
Yes.
What happened?
I believe my uncle or my dad confronted my uncle, but it was never spoken about with me and my parents ever again. It was never mentioned.
So how did the abuse stop? Why did it stop?
When my dad died and we'd moved in, my mom had a falling out with my grandparents, and we moved out at that point. And then I wasn't available anymore.
How would you describe Leslie Ross?
A monster, an absolute monster. To have done what he did is very disturbing. But I was also very afraid of him. He was the last time I was around him, I was 18, and he would come into the bar at that point. He'd have a piece of wood that was 2x2 with 4-inch nails sticking out of it. Last thing at night in the bar, he'd have his dog, another Alsatian, up on a leather leash, bouncing and aggressive. You were just terrified of him.
Was he a particularly violent man?
Yes, he was. He was. His own parents were afraid of him. Nobody ever said no to him. He'd just go in and lift what money he wanted from the till, what drinks he wanted, and walk away.
You were a bridesmaid at Leslie Ross's wedding. What was that like?
It was a pretty horrific day. Seeing all the friends and family gather around and congratulating him and his wife. And I'm standing there at the back thinking to myself, you don't know what a monster this guy is. And for me, that day was more like a funeral than a wedding. It made me never want to get married, put it that way. So, yeah, it's not a good day.
When you were growing up, how did you deal with the abuse? I mean, when did the realisation come that you had been abused, and how did you deal with it?
I became a boarder at Methody when I was 10. And in the boarding department, the dormitory that I slept in, there were 14 girls in there, and I was one of the youngest. So the rest of the girls would be 12, 13, and they were going to sex education class. And they were coming in with their newfound knowledge. And I realised that this was something I'd already had to be told about. And I began to realise that these girls were going out with their new boyfriends and kissing and seeing a normal development of your exploration and becoming an adult. And I couldn't talk about what had happened to me, and I couldn't, I felt like I belonged on another planet. I just felt completely isolated from it. I acted out really badly at different periods of my adolescence and early adulthood. I would say that I was self-destructive completely. I really had no self-esteem. I was afraid of a lot of things. It really just kept me in a shell where I kind of just lived in my own little bubble. I didn't consider me worth worrying about, and that's telling you the truth. I didn't consider me worth anything.
And that was quite a destructive period in your life.
Yeah, very much so. I was promiscuous. I drank a lot. Smoked, did every racket there was going. It was just anything that you could break the rule.
And you subsequently had 4 children of your own.
Yes, I do.
Did you form normal relationships with your partners?
I could not form. I didn't trust any males at all, really. I couldn't form a good relationship, intimate relationship that had its own issues. I always felt like I wasn't me in the relationship. I was this person who was performing what they'd been taught to perform by somebody when they were a child. It wasn't normal intimacy, and there wasn't any emotional bond. And it really was because as a child I'd said, I want 4 kids. And so the fathers of the children agreed to be fathers, but they knew they were never going to be part of my life. So that was a tough decision that my children suffered from throughout their lives.
So you had 4 different partners?
No, 3.
3
twins in the middle.
So that, but though you made a decision then to radically change your life,
yes.
What did you do?
I decided that I had to take control of my life again. And I had always been successful as a student. I had been Northern Ireland Hotel and Tours Board Catering Student of the Year in 1981. Never had to study for exams. I just walked in and did anything I wanted. And I walked into the Newcastle Technical College and told them I wanted to go to university. So they offered psychology, politics and general studies and said, yeah, A-levels, you'll take 2 years. I'm like, I don't have 2 years. I'm going to do it in a year. And they said, you can't. I'm like, let me try. So I did. And then they're like, what now? I'm like, I want to go to university. Where do you want to go? I want to go to Queen's. And so I finished the degree, I did a PhD, continued in research, came over to the States to Duke University, worked there for a couple of years, and I really felt that I needed a fresh start, because people had only seen me as single parent Debbie Ross, single parent Debbie, always in trouble. I didn't feel that I could reinvent myself or go back to my original self without leaving. And so moving to the States gave me that clean break. And there and here, I'm only recognised for myself, not what happened.
Well, you're a very accomplished individual. You're a research scientist.
Yes, I am.
I mean, not many people can say that they went from the dysfunctional family background that you had to becoming an accomplished research scientist.
No, I would say it's very rare. And it does, because it was a non-traditional route. I didn't go high school, college, on in. I had this hiatus in the middle where I kind of really messed up and tried to destroy myself. This was my way of freeing myself from it.
Do you think that by becoming immersed in education, that was a way of dealing with what had happened to you in the past?
Absolutely, because, me as a survivor, I always had issues with exposing my body to people, to touching or hugging people, to normal social interactions. But when you're in the science world, it's what you say and what you think that matters. It's not what you've been through. It's not anything. It's really just purely your mind that you can be judged on. And then the freedom to go there and do that, that really allowed me to come back out and flourish.
When did you decide to do something about what had happened to you in the past?
I checked the BBC news in the morning just to keep in touch with what's going on at home. And I opened one morning and there was a side profile of Leslie, and it was in relation to murder charges of ex-girlfriend. And he really just popped back into the world. He was the topic of discussion again amongst all my family and friends at home, who had just made the connection that I was his niece. And so it really brought up again all the turmoil, all the fear, and began to impact my life over here, which I thought I got away from. It just brought back that flood of fear and aggression and pushed me back into that. I literally went back to being my six-year-old self again, and that's basically where I'd been emotionally stopped growing. That's not really easy to function in a high career, scientific career, when you've got this element of your life that's just wrecking your mind.
So what did you decide to do about it?
And I contacted the police.
So you phoned the police in Northern Ireland. What happened then?
They put me in touch with a support person from the police who basically walked me through the charges and allegations that I was making. The police came over to New York a couple of years ago, and I did a formal interview with them. My sister had apparently been a victim, but had not been able to be strong enough to make charges. And I believe, as a result of all this coming back up in our lives at this much later date, that Karen unfortunately couldn't face it and took herself to bed, chose not to eat, and subsequently died. So I believe she was also a victim of his.
It was your sister?
Yes, my younger sister. She just couldn't cope with everything that it brought up.
Did you see Leslie Ross in court, and how did you feel when you saw him?
I was really shaky and nervous, but I wouldn't let him see it. And I looked him dead in the eye, and I was like, you've got away with so much.
Are you disappointed that the sex abuse trial didn't happen?
I am disappointed. I didn't get a chance to end this the way that it should have been ended. And so speaking today is the next best thing I can do.
People might say, well, there were only ever allegations against him because the trial didn't happen. What do you feel would have been the outcome?
The outcome would have been out-and-out conviction. There was no doubt. I have very clear memories of exactly what happened. Very specific memories. Unfortunately, they're burned in your mind. They pop out. I wish I could get rid of them, but you don't. So I do believe it would have ended in a conviction.
How did you feel when you were told that Leslie Ross was dead?
Relieved. Absolutely relieved. I was always worried about going back to Northern Ireland, that somehow or other we'd walk into each other, we'd bump into each other, that he could find out where my children were, that he could do something to them in way of getting back at me. That's how scared I was of him. I never told my kids even that he existed, and tried to make sure that our lives weren't impacted. And I suddenly gained freedom. It was the first time I could say I was on the planet without my perpetrator.
Now, under the law, you're entitled to anonymity. You've decided to waive that by speaking to me today. Why have you done that?
I'd like to appeal to other people who are victims to speak up. It doesn't matter how much time has passed. It is a case of releasing yourself to putting the blame on the perpetrator, to stop feeling the shame of yourself and place it where it belongs. And to encourage people, when they do speak up, there's no statute of limitations in Northern Ireland, so it's never too late. It's never too late to decide to take back your own life and to reach your own goals again, to realise that they damaged you as a person, but you ultimately can heal. There are avenues, and it's becoming more able to be talked about with people. It's talked about in school to our children. These are easier conversations to have, and as a result of having those conversations, the damage can be minimised. It won't be removed, but it can be dealt with. It doesn't need to impact your life for 40 years the way it has done mine. Speak up, get help, because the blame never belonged with you. I was never the perpetrator here. He was. And the world needs to know that that's where the shame and blame belongs. The victims should be heard.
Debbie Ross there, talking to our investigations correspondent, Kevin McGee. I want to give you the lifeline number, just in case there is someone that you feel you want to talk to, then 0808 808 8000. That's Lifeline on 0808 808 8000. Their lines are open 24/7.